Blog Talk Radio.
Live and bass from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhyme record, break neck spines and vertebrae, step on the plane like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirtbag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim Thug and them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like En Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect. All I need is a check. Might check.
What a show. What a day. I got to tell you, you go and live your daily life, guys. And it's amazing what comes to be when you look down at your phone and, you know, I obviously the notifications and all that stuff from various Twitter accounts, what's going on, you check the news and you think you have an outline for your podcast that you're recording that night. And then the Memphis Grizzlies and Coach David Fizdale decide to just kind of throw that out the window. And that is how we are beginning Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Thank you wherever you are, whenever you're listening, however you're taking in the podcast for joining us tonight. My guest this evening, one of them is a repeat guest from last week. He did such a tremendous job with his work with Jason Wexler and Chris Vernon of the Grizzlies, the interview piece that he did and lots of audio that he got. Tremendous job. So I wanted to make sure that we didn't really finish that conversation. We had a really good chat. A lot of people were very receptive to it. It was the most downloaded and listened to episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live in the history of the show. So I felt like I would be doing us a disservice if I didn't bring Chase Lucas back on for a second week. Chase, congratulations on the success and the buzz that your work generated last week, and welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks. It was fun.
So we're excited to have Chase back on, and then, of course, an old friend of the program, Matt, has been on plenty of times. Matt Ardlicka, senior features writer over at grizzlybearblues.com. We wanted to bring him in for this one. And, Matt, again, we had an idea for how this show was going to go, and then the news that broke about Zach Randolph kind of overtook the airwaves.
I have a confession to make.
Oh boy.
I don't know what push notifications are. I don't know how to turn them on. I know
what?
That's a sad old thing to say. Yeah, I know. Don't at me.
Don't at me. Don't tell me how to do it. I think Matt does it because he doesn't want to know. So that's fair. But it's probably a good thing because I think I even have it on my phone where they buzz. So I got like, you know, 7 or 8 buzzes on my phone, and then I'm in the middle of football practice. So when I get an opportunity, send the kids to water or whatever it might be, I look down at my phone and there it is. You know, Zach Randolph is going to be coming off the bench this season. And this is something that at Grizzly Bear Blues, we've had several writers over the course of the past couple of years kind of say maybe it's time for this. And it's taken a changing of the guard in terms of coaching staff for it to come to fruition. But it's happening, and we'll talk more about that here in a moment with Matt and Chase. I'm excited to have them with me on this week's episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Ways to get in touch with the show. You can follow us on Twitter at GBB Live. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Mullinax. You can follow the blog overall, SB Nation's Memphis Grizzlies blog, Grizzly Bear Blues at SBN Grizzlies. You can follow Matt on Twitter at The Real HRDLICKA. And you can follow Chase on Twitter at Deep Fried Couch. The chat room is also open. If you're listening to the live recording on Wednesday night, you can get into the chat. If you have a question or a comment for me, for Chase, for Matt, feel free to hop into the chat room and discuss it with us there. Again, the rundown for the show, we're going to talk about eventually Chris Vernon. He had great audio like we talked about in last week's show, one of the most listened to, or it was the most listened to in the history of the program. So thank you all for that. We have additional audio from Chris. He talks about the Ringer. He talks about how the Ringer people with Bill Simmons and them, how that came to be. He talks about how they view the Grizzlies, and it's a good listen. We'll listen to that. Possibly we were going to listen to it in its entirety, but again, that was before the news broke here of Zach Randolph. That'll probably dominate the early parts of our conversation. We will get to Chris Vernon, though, in that audio. We will talk about our question of the day that was tweeted out. I think that's an important one, going along with an ESPN article that came out earlier in the week about the Memphis Grizzlies and how their future looks. But we have to begin with the report from Ron Tillery of the Memphis Commercial Appeal, and then Grind City Media and all that further down the road. Various people start tweeting and reporting that Zach Randolph will be a bench player this year. He will come off the bench. He is a second unit guy. Jamichael Green, at least for now, is the starting powered forward for the Memphis Grizzlies. And Matt, I'll start with you on this. This is something that, you know, in conversations with you and I, obviously Kevin Leip and others that we talk to, and obviously people on the blog, this is something that, whether it's a reduced role or whether it was, you know, reduced usage rate, whatever it might be, there's been varying degrees of some sort of conversation for this, because as the modern NBA picks up its pace, and Fizdale said it to his credit, it's not feasible to have Zach Randolph and Marcus Gasol playing alongside each other anymore if you hope to play with pace that keeps you competitive on a night-in, night-out basis in the NBA. You could play with one of the two, and Mark is better than Zach at this point in their careers, so it makes sense that Mark remains the starter and Zach moves to the bench. What are your initial thoughts, Matt, as you take a look at a Grizzlies roster that no longer has number 50 for the city in the starting lineup?
Well, actually, my initial thought is that I expected a hell of a lot more outrage from fans than I saw. I don't think I saw, like, anybody really on – and I wasn't on Twitter, like, you know, scanning for this. But I was expecting to see a lot less understanding. So, you know, I'm sort of surprised that people are as accepting of this as they are. I don't know if that has to do with just sort of the way it broke and, you know, Tillery coming out and saying, you know, that, and then, you know, Grind City Media saying that he was very accepting and that everybody is on board and everybody knows what everybody, you know, everybody is, you know, on the same page and Zach is totally willing to do this and all that. I think the reason to break Zach out of the starting lineup is twofold. One, you get a little bit more of, I hesitate to call him a creator, but sort of an offensive fulcrum to the second unit. I think that that's the thing that Mr. Wallace mentioned in his Grind City article. But I think the thing that went unmentioned, and I think probably even a more, I mean, Zach's untenable defensively at power forward when you don't have anybody else. Like Parsons and Zach together defensively, all you have to do is, I mean, that's just too many guys to run a pick and roll at, you know, like Golden State will eat anybody up, but Golden State will eat that up. I mean, even Dallas could put Harrison Barnes or Wes Matthews into a pick and roll very easily with those two guys on the court at the same time. So it's like untenable defensively to do. So moving him kind of staggers Parsons and Zach, but that's even without Parsons starting the season. Like, we don't know if he's going to be ready for the opener. So a thought of mine was just like, they wanted to just put this to bed early and kind of establish this at a role. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. The last time Zach went to the bench, it didn't quite work, but, you know, maybe this mix of players, it'll work out better. What do you guys think?
Well, I personally, for one, am excited about it because it's something that it shows that David Fizdale is not afraid to shake up what I have perceived the past couple of seasons to be complacency. You know, as a former athlete and as a coach now, you know, and you hear coaches talk about it all the time, complacency. Nick Saban says it all the time. The worst enemy of a team is complacency, a successful team. And I think this Grizzlies team has been complacent. And I think the fan base, to a larger extent, that as complacent as a fan base can be, has been complacent. They've been okay with saying Zach Randolph's the starter, Tony Allen's the starter. This is the way it is. This is the way we play. And we're all guilty of it to an extent. When they signed Chandler Parsons, I automatically assumed that it'd be Tony Allen starting next to Zach Randolph. Parsons is a starting small forward. Roll the ball out. Let's play. But Fizdale, to his credit, Chase, has come in, and he is now saying this is how it's going to be. We are going to modernize this offense. We're going to modernize the way that we play, our style of play. We are going to catch up with the rest of the league, or at least try to, and this is one of the ways we can do it with the pieces that we currently have. For me, Chase, that is something that I'm excited about, and it's going to make watching this team more interesting because we don't know what's coming down the pike. They got predictable at times.
Yeah, so my kind of initial reaction, and it sort of ties into what Matt said about, you know, not seeing a whole lot of outrage. It was funny to me because in some ways it was a little bit of deja vu, and I thought it was interesting to see a lot of people, all their takes were sort of the same in terms of, yeah, this is good for Zach. He can beat up on second unit bigs. You got to have guys who are a little more versatile on defense. And what Matt was talking about, you know, with having maybe people didn't mention Parsons and Zach, but all the issues that people brought up in terms of why it might be a good move to have Zach go there, we've talked about it, it feels like, for so long. And we went through briefly a benching that it was just kind of like, it's all laid out there for us. And I think what was holding it up, and this is a little bit of the Tony Allen problem, is that, yeah, we know that ideally in the current NBA, that it would be beneficial to have a guy who can switch on defense, preferably who can step out and shoot the three playing next to Mark. And it would be preferable to have, just like it would be preferable to have a shooting guard who can knock down a three. And the weird kind of thing the Grizzlies have been dealing with is philosophy versus personnel. Because even though both of those things are true, the fact has remained that the best power forward we've had has been Zach. And when you look at any data, we're always just better when Tony's out there. And a lot of that's because we don't have the ideal role guys to fill in. So I think it's interesting because I think a lot of it's just Fizdale coming in and making his mark. But it's also kind of like saying, yeah, maybe Jermichael isn't even that guy. Maybe we still don't have him. But Zach maybe regressing a little and the need to move forward has kind of tipped the scales to where, yeah, we don't have the perfect guy to replace Zach Randolph as the starting power forward of the Memphis Grizzlies. But philosophically and for the team, for that starting unit, we've got to try to play a different way.
And you make an interesting point there, Chase. Real quick. You mentioned a point there, Chase, and I'll bring you back in on this, Matt. Jermichael Green, I tweeted out about this. You know, Jermichael Green may not be the dominant kind of guy. He might not be the perfect fit, like you said, alongside Mark. But he is different, and it is an opportunity for Jermichael Green to kind of show what he is worth. Because, Matt, and this is where I was going to bring you in, you have said and mentioned, and I've kind of piggybacked off of the idea because I agree with you, Jermichael Green is in line for a payday. And now that opportunity just got that much bigger. Even before the Zach Randolph benching, there was a real chance that Jermichael Green was going to come out, have a tremendous season. And now he goes from a guy who 2 years ago wasn't an NBA player to being somebody making $10 to $12 million a year, perhaps even more, depending on the team that falls in love with him. So now you have a guy in Jermichael Green who not only makes the Grizzlies look a little bit more attractive in terms of pace, in terms of spreading the floor, in terms of switching on defense. Now it's a chance for Jermichael Green to really show what his worth is in terms of potentially being maybe not an NBA starter for a championship caliber team, but a guy who can be a real, real, real big role player. I mean, Matt, tell me about what this means for Jermichael Green.
Well, first, I wanted to mention something. One thing Chase said made me kind of jog my memory. The Grizzlies have been sort of moving this direction for a while. If you look at the minutes that Zach and Mark played, the potential minutes, like when they were both healthy, it has been declining for 2 to 3 years now. They just have tried to split up that combo, whether it be to like push the ball, which pace is thrown around a ton this time of year, but like pace doesn't matter. It matters more about like, you know, how quickly you get into your offense, which is a really hard thing to find a metric on. Like, we don't have that, you know? So it's kind of like visually, how fast are they getting into it and how quickly are they starting to actually like pressure the basket and get good shots. But anyway, for Jermichael, this is like, I guess I'm sort of neutral on the whole, like, is this going to make the Grizzlies better? Because, you know, they still have the same sort of like roster crunch where they've got like five bigs that all need minutes. And, you know, Parsons should play at the four a little bit, although this move probably means that he won't, which, you know, shifts his minutes to the wing and kind of, you know, sort of like masks some of the fact that we don't really have any good wings anymore, like other than Parsons and Tony Allen. But for Jermichael, like, he didn't have to even have a great year to get paid. Like, guys just get paid now. and he's on a great contract. He's in the final year. He's making less than $1 million. And I mean, I think only 200,000 of it is guaranteed, which obviously is going to get picked up now. But like, I was looking at him as like a rotation big, possibly getting $10 million next year. Like John Lure got $10 million, which was absurd. But the salary cap's going up next year, and like bigs that can do a little bit of everything are, you know, in kind of short supply. Like Stan Van Gundy squinted and said, "Oh, John Lure, he's a stretch four, possibly a stretch five. Let's lock him up." Like that's going to happen next year, and really, like the Grizzlies can afford to pay him. It's not a big deal. Like they can have Jermichael on the team, but going forward in 2 years, they stand to have real cap space again. And if you have Jermichael locked in at, let's just throw out $10 million. It could be more, could be less. They won't have cap room. So the question is, like, moving Jermichael into this role is almost like an audition of, like, are we going to – is Jermichael the guy that's going to be able to take over for Zach long-term? And should we pay him, or should we try to get into free agency again in 2 years?
And it's also kind of a way to – because, like you said, there's a lot of different guys with size who should get minutes at that four. If you look at the roster, it also can kind of be, you know, and I go back to Kevin Leip last year saying the Grizzlies are a team in transition while trying to stay competitive. They have various guys on the roster now that can give a different look as to what works best alongside their franchise center, Marc Gasol. They've got Brandon Wright, who's a tall, lanky, athletic guy who can attack in the pick and roll. They've got Jermichael Green, who, as you said, Matt, can do a little bit of everything. They've got Chandler Parsons, who projects to be kind of a stretch four player down the line. I mean, they have a bunch of different types of modern NBA, quote unquote, bigs that it will be fascinating to watch. And Matt, I'll stick with you. It'll be fascinating to see how they kind of fit these minutes around Marc Gasol. Because like you said, Zach and Mark probably aren't going to play together a ton anymore. So who they fit around Mark, it also is an audition, not just for Jermichael, but also the kind of style that'll fit alongside Gasol moving forward.
Yeah, real quick, because I kind of want to hear what Chase has to say about this. But like real quick, when we signed Parsons, everybody was kind of saying like playmaker, perfect fit at small forward, all this stuff. Like Parsons is Zebo's replacement. Parsons is going to be a power forward in 2 years. He already is like too slow. You know, and that's actually one of the reasons why I'm not worried about his lateral quickness at all, because he's going to be a power forward. He's going to be, you know, like 35% of his minutes last year at power forward. That's going to flip in 2 years. He's going to be at like 2/3 of his minutes at power forward and a third at small forward. But Chase, what do you think about this whole thing? I want to hear your thoughts. I haven't talked to you yet about this.
About Parsons basically ending up a four on the back part of this contract, you mean?
Well, yeah, him and just Jermichael and what this whole, like, big yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't have a specific question. I just wanted to hear your melodious voice.
Well, I mean, who could blame me? No, Jermichael, so first of all, like, on one hand, I almost don't even want to dwell on Jermichael that much because he's like the least important part of this. Like I said, it's a philosophical decision to go a different direction. But my question with Jermichael, and I was going to ask you guys, maybe we'll get to this, but I really don't know how good he is or good he is not. We kind of, you know, we saw flashes of him being really exciting, and it's just like people were so excited to see anyone who is not one of the guys we've been watching for years play really well. And of course he's not a really young player, and then he kind of fell off a little bit, but who knows, like you can't make much of the larger sample we have of him. Like he played kind of crappy in a summer league this summer. Who cares about that? He kind of fell off playing with a bunch of nobodies at the end of last year. Like you can't make much of that. So, I mean, for me, that's a question. How good is he? I'd like to know, is he really a shooter? I mean, I know he's not like a knockdown shooter, but how good of a shooter can he be? Can he really be someone that demands attention in the corner? I think he shot like pretty well corner, not so well from the other last year. But I mean, the numbers, the attempts weren't significant enough to really know. When I watch him shoot, I'm not like in love with his stroke, but I'm also not an expert on anything like that. But he doesn't come off as just a guy who's going to be deadly from the corner even, but we'll see on that. As far as just the big log jam, yeah, I don't know. It's tough because what you have is a bunch of pretty good, like your biggest clump of rotation players basically all play positions that are less valuable than what you try to be trading them for. I mean, you know, that's, if there's anything people don't want, it's a whole bunch of bigs, and that's what we've got. And not even that, unproven ones or coming off of injury, Brandon Wright. So I think maybe if we've ever discussed it, you've been a little more confident in me than I have been on how they're going to get out of that kind of roster crunch and end up with an actual like real wing rotation. But it's definitely a concern for me because you got a whole bunch of depth in the place you probably least need it.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on what I'm thinking, is that this is like, you can't just move Zebo to the bench and like voodoo make all this, like make the Grizzlies better. Like it'll clear up some of this stuff, but like we don't know how good Jermichael is. He fouls too much. He gets pushed around a little bit, so like he can't really, like if he switched onto a center, that's kind of a problem.
Well, remember, Matt, he's a small forward.
Oh, that's right.
You have to remember, he's a small forward.
Dave Yeager's favorite small forward.
I completely forgot, Joe. You're absolutely right. Just strike everything from the record.
So the wing rotation is playing. Maybe Jermichael is the starting small forward, and Parsons is playing the four. I think we figured it out.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, I mean, all kidding aside, like he has to, if he's playing next to Parsons, and you're playing a team that has like a bulkier, like which would you rather have, Parsons or Jermichael guarding Carmelo? Like probably Parsons, because Jermichael will foul too much. But at the same time, like you don't feel super confident with either guy on him. So like, you know, that's what I'm saying. You can't just wave a magic wand and move Zebo to the bench and like, oh, this will just fit. Like some things will fit better, but other things won't.
I agree with that completely. And you look at matchups up in the Western Conference. I mean, you look at the Utah Jazz. I mean, you have the Utah Jazz who are going to have, you know, Gobert, and they're going to have Derek Favors. And I'm not sure how good the Jazz are going to be, but a lot of people are pretty high on them. And if the Jazz are a team that the Grizzlies could potentially see in the playoffs, you look at matchups there. Obviously, Golden State, everybody talks about the new lineup of death with Durant replacing Harrison Barnes, which in theory is a pretty massive upgrade. You know, how this move tries to get the Grizzlies caught up is interesting, but you guys make interesting points as well. It's not a fix. It's more of just kind of a band-aid or a temporary kind of thing. And it's making the best of the roster that they have, because they are what they are. They have the pieces in place. They are what they're going to be, at least for the foreseeable immediate future. But it also, to me, makes things more up in the air in terms of potential moves for a wing. And that's not to say that that's down the pike. That's pure speculation on my part. But if you can bench Zach Randolph, if you can come in as a new head coach and say, Zach, you're going to the bench, you're doing it the whole season, this is how we're going to pursue it, that means that, A, the front office truly believes in the vision for Fizdale, and like you guys said, they're already kind of moving in that direction anyway, and B, that all bets are off in terms of, well, what's next for Tony Allen? Does that mean Tony Allen stays a starter? I don't think that necessarily guarantees that either. You might have a James Ennis in that role. You might have a Troy Daniels, who did not, it sounds like, in the Grizzlies' Magic initial preseason game, have the best defensive performance, but we kind of knew that going in. But it kind of makes the roster as a whole more on edge. And I think that's good. I think this team needed it. It needed to kind of be put in a place to where, okay, things are getting shaken up a little bit and we kind of have to find our footing again. You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I'm your host, Joe Mullinax. My wonderful guests for this week's podcast are Matt Arlicka and Chase Lucas, two great members of the feature staff over at GBB. Make sure you're following them on Twitter, excuse me, if you don't already do so. Matt is at The Real HRDLICKA. And Chase, an underfollowed person on Twitter. He definitely needs more followers, as Matt said earlier, at Deep Fried Couch. Now, I am going to point out, gentlemen, that we are at a stage with this Grizzlies team where it's not just the wing where there's major questions. And obviously we'll probably come back to the Zach Randolph conversation point a little bit later, especially when we talk about the future rankings. I feel like that'll be a nice way to bring our conversation into a nice cycle there, or circle. But the point guard question is something that a lot of people are pointing out. Of course, through the Magic preseason game, that was one of the things that I talked about in our preview over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com as something to watch. The performances of Wade Baldwin, Andrew Harrison, how they look in terms of an actual NBA preseason game, which is a little bit more intense than a summer league game, but probably not too much more. So you look at those two players, you see how they play. Wade Baldwin looked much better than he did in the summer league. Harrison looked a little bit better. But Chase, how do you perceive, you know, we talk about the front court. Front court's got a pretty big log jam. And it's the opposite at the point guard position, where you're hoping that one of these two young players are able to kind of rise up and take on this role. How are you feeling about the spot behind Mike Conley, which is pretty important as recent history has shown us, because it's pretty likely that Mike Conley's not going to make it all 82 games.
Yeah, I'm confused about it. Maybe confused is the wrong word, but like at this stage, we're early enough in the preseason where we've been told that these are the options as far as a backup point. We know, like, hey, let Harrison and Baldwin battle it out, and Chalmers is always looming, as Chris Harrington says, until he signs elsewhere. It's not off the table that he'll be with the Grizzlies. And so at the same time, like, the season's going to come and real minutes are going to happen, and someone is going to be playing backup point guard. I assume if Fizdale and the support staff around him going all the way up to the front office, if they're looking at data and he's really going to take that into account and he's looking at needing to rest guys, Conley is not young, and it kind of gets lost in the mix. The injury he's coming off of, which is Achilles related, that's not something that usually just totally goes away. And so he's probably going to be in that rest, the occasional game off plan. So we're not talking about an insignificant amount of playing time. And I honestly don't know how it's going to look. I mean, Wade Baldwin looks really exciting for Wade Baldwin in that preseason game. But when you talk about a team that wants to be good, and internally, I know they think they're really good, it's going to be pretty scary to watch, I think, at the beginning. As we're watching one of these guys fill the backup point guard minutes. And I know he's talked about things about having, you know, non-traditional point guards handle the ball some, and I don't really even want to think about Tony Allen running any sets of point guard. But yeah, I honestly don't know how it's going to look, and I think it's probably going to have a lot of us pulling our hair out, at least through the early portion of the season.
Hopefully not too much, because I'm running out of hair. I know you guys.
Me and you both.
I got a haircut yesterday, and every time I look after a haircut, it's a little more thin and a little more thin. Matt, where are you at with this backup point guard situation? I agree with Chase completely. It's going to be something that we have to keep an eye on and feel pretty nervous about. And Wade Baldwin, Harrison, neither one of them really inspires a lot of faith. And then when you're trying to talk yourself into Tony Roten, it might be time to put down the computer or the phone that you're chatting on and grab a six pack of beer and try to calm your nerves.
Well, I am drinking right now, so maybe that's why.
There you go.
Yeah.
Smart man.
So I guess I was talking to some people earlier this week, and for me, the barometer for success this year is not tied to wins. And it's for questions like we've been talking about. Like, it's they don't have a backup point guard, but they also need to know, like, what they have in Wade Baldwin and Andrew Harrison. And, you know, me and Andrew Ford were really high on Wade Baldwin and before the draft, and we were both kind of hoping that he would fall to us or we'd get him. Wade Baldwin his best position may not be point guard. Like, especially this year, What they're kind of winking at is, like, taking off some of, like, the heavy duty, you know, you can't entrust a 19-year-old, 20-year-old to run the offense of a playoff team. If you look at, like, Harrington's compared him to Eric Bledsoe, and I think that's pretty apt. But what Wade Baldwin's best chance for the first couple years before he kind of understands the nuances and frankly, just, like, to make the game as easy as possible, he's a 3-and-D player with the added bonus that – he might be able to dribble a little bit, you know, like if you imagine him as just being able to take the defensive assignment in the backcourt that is harder, and just throw him on Chris Paul for a while. Throw him on, if you're playing Phoenix, let him go up against Eric Bledsoe, and just let him get run over a few times by these awesome athletes, and just see if he can take it. Like, if it's January and he's starting to kind of like feel his oats and be able to stop some of these guys, then suddenly you have a guy who can take some pressure off of Conley that way. Like, the question is not whether he can run the offense this year, because he probably can't. It's, can he defend a backcourt position, and can he hit open threes and maybe pump fake a guy and get into the lane and start to understand the passing angles and what he can get away with and what he can't. Like, I just don't have any
confidence
that he can be able to run. What's that?
The three part has looked dicey so far, really.
Yeah, right.
He was almost scared to take him in that preseason game.
Yeah. But, you know, he's 19, he's 20. That's why this season doesn't come down to wins. There are so many question marks, and they're going to lose their pick no matter what, pretty much. Like, they have to be a bottom five team to keep their pick. So the whole thing is just see what you have in these young guys and try to make the playoffs. If they get in the playoffs, it doesn't matter where they finish, to me, personally. I'd preferably not be the eighth seed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. But,
you know, 7-2, I honestly don't care.
Chase, where do you stand on that? Because that's an interesting take. And as we go through over at the blog, grizzlybearblues.com, we're doing our over-under previews. You guys each have already published your over-under preview contribution. And as I go and do the math before the articles get posted, you know, on who takes the over, who takes the under, what the average projected record is, I'm always fascinated, obviously, by the Grizzlies, but just in general, how people perceive what success is. And Matt made a great point there. Anything from the 2-7 seed this year would be considered, you know, successful in terms of you make the playoffs, you're going to lose your pick anyway. If you're going to lose your pick anyway, you might as well make the playoffs and you know, get some additional playoff revenue and make some extra memories, that kind of stuff. Good experience for a first-year head coach as well, and David Fizdale. So, Chase, what's your take on that? How are you perceiving this season? Because obviously the point guard question is just kind of a micro vision of a macro issue in terms of the roster overturn, in terms of the newness of the coaching staff. What are your expectations in terms of not just the point guard position, but, you know, obviously the over under, you know, Chase, you took the under. So obviously your expectations are a little bit different when it comes to the Grizzlies than maybe a majority of our listeners and readers.
Yeah, I took the under, and it's mostly health-related. And most of the time, I think with your average team, I think it's okay to say you can't predict health, and so you kind of throw it out. But with the Grizzlies, it's so extreme that to say you can't predict health and to leave that out of the equation, in doing that, you are predicting health. If you're throwing that out of your analysis with the Grizzlies, then you're predicting athletes.
Well, that's fair.
And so it's the three guys. It's Mark, it's Mike. It's Mike has an Achilles. Mark has a historically not great foot injury. Now, some of the stuff the Grizzlies sold, and Jason Wexler is very emboldened to tell you also that they were right about Mark's recovery, and that his foot is set up in such a way that the prognosis was better than it normally would be for that injury. And to his credit, Mark looks incredible. But then you got Parsons coming off back-to-back. He had – a couple years ago had the microfracture, and then, as it seems to be, what was thought to be a 6-week recovery cleanup on his meniscus was actually a repair of the meniscus, and now we are all still waiting with bated breath to see if he makes the opening night roster. So I agree. That's why I went under. I think the health questions are just that prevalent, and I think they're going to be resting guys, and when you have health and questionable depth and you combine them, they just feed off of each other. But I agree with Matt about wins not really being necessarily the measure, because I don't think this team is set up, even if health is better than expected, let's just say average, I don't think this team is set up to win a ton of regular season games. What I do think they might be set up to do is when everyone is playing and everyone is healthy, I think they have a chance to be really, really good. And so I think there'll be nights where you go up against some teams as the underdog and they look like world beaters. And so I think if you can win enough games to stay out of the eighth seed, I'm not with Matt. I very much care that we don't get the eighth seed. But if you can stay out of that eighth seed and you keep enough guys healthy through however you have to do it, and you can develop enough the young guys a little bit to where they can help as you're resting some of your older guys and you make it to the playoffs, I think this team, if they're mostly intact come playoff time, I think they could knock somebody off. And I think that's kind of their best bet, is to be a team that doesn't have home advantage but has kept themselves fresh enough that they can knock off one of those top seeds. And I think that's reasonable, because I do think that they're going to be really good when they're all there.
The more things change, the more they stay the same, right? I mean, obviously Golden State remains a monster, in theory is more monstrous than ever now that Kevin Durant is out there. San Antonio remains kind of the second seed there. Obviously, LaMarcus Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard, major pieces. But below that, again, it's similar to last year if the Grizzlies were healthy, which, of course, they weren't. You know, the Clippers don't inspire fear. You know, the Utah Jazz are the sexy team that lots of people are picking to make a massive leap this year. But they haven't necessarily had the success, at least their key players. They haven't had the success in the postseason that the Grizzlies have had in terms of winning playoff series, making it to the Western Conference Finals. Memphis is capable of beating just about anybody. And even with San Antonio, now that Tim Duncan is gone and they've replaced him with Pau Gasol, I'm fascinated to see how they play with Pau in that role. Are they going to be able to play as good of defense with Pau Gasol out there instead of Tim Duncan? I'm not so sure that's going to be the case. So like you said, they are going to be able, when healthy and if healthy, to really compete with a variety of different teams. And it's going to be fascinating to watch play out, because like you, I agree that the between 2 and 7 seed, because I don't want to see Golden State in the first round either. But any of those matchups, theoretically, whether it's Portland, whether it's Utah, the Clippers, you know, up and down the list, even maybe the Dallas Mavericks, if they have a good run, none of them necessarily are something so above and beyond the head of the Grizzlies that you would look at and say, oh God, they don't have a chance in hell. You know, maybe you'd say that for Golden State, but any of the other ones, they have a shot, and that's all you can ask. And now that they have Chandler Parsons in the fold, to me, and we talked about this with Jeff Calkins last week on the show, for me, the over with the Grizzlies is Marc Gasol's health and the way they take the Fizdale. I agree with Jeff on that. If they're able to do those two things, I think they can get 44 or 45 wins. And then you add Parsons into the fold, and that's where you can maybe get to 47, 48, get up a little bit closer to 50. So that is really going to be the emphasis and focus for this season, is health. And a good bit of news. Go ahead.
Yeah, real quick on Parsons, I just wanted to say, in case anybody was listening and wondering, I mentioned that about the meniscus, it being an actual repair and maybe not just a cleanup, which is originally thought. That came from the Dunked On podcast, Mavericks preview. That was from Tim McMahon. So that's one thing. I had not heard that anywhere else. So if people are saying, I've never heard that before, you know, where's the link? That's where I heard it this morning. I think they released that preview. So just an FYI.
And that's a good segue, because Tim McMahon also tweeted out and commented on ESPN today. I'm guessing he and Chandler Parsons are tight. That's our Chandler Parsons source, we have learned, with the Memphis Grizzlies. Chandler Parsons participated in his first limited contact practice today. Now, obviously, that doesn't scream he's going to play Thursday night in their next preseason game, but it is a sign of progress, hopefully towards that goal of him being ready to play against the Timberwolves here in a few weeks on opening night. You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Monax. My guests for this episode of the show are Matt Ardlicka and Chase Lucas. Make sure you're following them on Twitter if you don't already do so, at The Real, HRDLICKA, and at Deep Fried Couch. Now, gentlemen, we came into the show, as I said, with kind of the goal being listening to Chris Vernon and getting that audio back out there. But with the news of the day, it kind of feels like that's been pushed to the wayside. I think we're going to have to save that for another episode, which means I'm going to have you guys back on. Real bummer. Talking with two of my best writers and thinkers here about basketball. I'm disappointed we're going to have to do that again sometime. But I do want to, because I know your guys' time is precious, our last question is the Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day. And this is something we can spend a good bit of time on, which is why I'm kind of rearranging here on the fly.
Sure.
ESPN this week put out an article, and they do this every year, I think, and it's a collection of writers. You know, it's Arnovitz, it's Kevin Pelton, it's a variety of folks who kind of weigh in on this, and it's a future power rankings. So they look at what the team's possibilities in terms of success moving forward over the next few years is, and they kind of put, you know, whether it's draft picks, free agency, cap space, a variety of things. They make it into one round number, and they rank teams based off of that. Well, the Grizzlies were ranked 28th. And that, for those of you that aren't familiar with the number of teams in the NBA, there's 30. So that means that the Grizzlies are considered to be one of the absolute worst teams in terms of future success, according to this measurement by ESPN. The reasoning they give for it is, I think Matt is the one who kind of tipped the cap to it earlier. You know, they're going to be giving up their first round pick this year. There's possibilities of future picks being taken in future years. So they have a little less control of their draft status moving forward. They're obviously locked in on Parsons, Gasol, and Conley, three guys with injury history, as we've talked about here and everybody's talked about everywhere else. Their future, according to ESPN, looks a little bit bleak. So the GBB Live question of the day was, where would the Memphis Grizzlies be in your own personal NBA future rankings? And again, we are a Grizzlies fan blog. The folks that follow us are Grizzlies fans. Probably not overly surprising that the Grizzlies, 53% of our voters, and thanks to all those that chimed in, said that the Grizzlies have the first through 10th best future of any NBA team moving forward. Even for the most optimistic person.
Child, please.
Even for the most optimistic person. And I feel like I, for the most part, am an optimistic Grizzlies prognosticator. All right?
Jeff Green.
Jeff Green's a great example. That would be my advice to my 25-year-old self. Shut the hell up about Jeff Green. But anyway, looking at that, I can't honestly say that that is a good answer. I think the 28th is a little bit low. But when I look at their future draft pick situation, when I look at the players that are already on the roster, which in fairness to the Grizzlies, they're in a better spot in terms of youth now than they were at this point last year. I mean, the team has gotten, especially the bench, has gotten drastically younger in just, you know, the calendar year. So if you look at this roster top to bottom, and I'll start with you on this, Chase, top to bottom, you look at the draft pick situation, you look at the salary cap, where would you put them? You don't have to give me a specific number, but the question of the day was first through 10th, which I think all three of us sitting here can agree that that's not where we would put them. Are they more middle of the road, 11th through 20th, or are they that bottom third, 21st through 30th? How optimistic or pessimistic, or maybe realistic, are you about the future of these Memphis Grizzlies heading into not just the 2016-2017 season, but also beyond?
I'm just so excited because I wrote that the Grizzlies are going to go under, and then I argued about how they're going to get injured with people on Twitter, and so now I actually get to be optimistic about something. Not only that, I think that all three of us are going to say 28 is slow, but, you know, the excitement of all of us being optimistic about something has me ready to go. But I would probably say somewhere in that, you know, 20 to 23 range. I mean, I didn't go through and pay an immense amount of attention to the other teams, but I think, and they have categories on here. So the categories are players, management, money, market, and draft. And market, I don't really know how you determine. I throw that category out. They had the Grizzlies 25th. But the one place that I would have the Grizzlies a good bit higher, and maybe this is just, you know, being a Grizzlies fan or something, but I'd have management higher than 22. I feel mostly, and I know that this is a bit of a leap of faith because there's been so much turnover and so much turmoil throughout the Grizzlies front office, but I feel pretty confident that we know that the owner is bought in. He's willing to spend. He's willing to spend on the extra resources that are not, you know, that don't count against the salary cap, that you're free to spend as you want. And I know he sees that as kind of a way to spend past other teams, even though you're bound by the salary cap on players. And so I'm pretty confident in the Grizzlies leadership. Generally, I think they have a little bit more stable situation. I like Fizdale a whole lot, even though we can't tell a tremendous amount about him, but I think he's actually going to be a guy that is willing to work back and forth. So, you know, the draft situation is what it is. In terms of picks, they've made some boneheaded trades to get rid of first round picks. But the other thing I would say, and you mentioned this, that the youth is better than where it was. One thing, and this isn't so much speaking to the ESPN rankings, this is just kind of a word of encouragement to Grizzlies fans at large, is I do a lot of talking, or in some cases writing, about the things that Grizzlies fans take for granted that are going to go worse than we think. But one thing that I think Grizzlies fans, and I fall into this, have been conditioned towards is to think none of these young guys are ever going to turn into anything. And it's just simply not true. I know that, like, the thing that drives me crazy is when some fans say, who cares if they traded a first? They can't make a good draft pick anyway. Well, one, a first is a valuable asset. But two, you know, there have been so much turnover, like I just talked about the front offices and coaches. You know, you can't really evaluate their ability to draft so much. And to say that they'll never have a good draft pick would be to say that you think there's some sort of magical curse on them. And so I think that, you know, there's a chance, and there really needs to come to fruition, that Wade Baldwin turns out to be a really good player. Jarrell Martin could turn out to be a good player. So I think there's reason for some more optimism than 28 for sure.
Matt, same question to you. Where would you put the Memphis Grizzlies? Would you have them in that middle area? Would you have them in the bottom third, maybe a little bit closer, like Chase just said? Chase is pretty optimistic on this, and I'm leaning that way as well, but I'm interested to your thoughts on the matter.
Well, I guess I didn't quite understand the methodology that ESPN was using, because I don't pay for Insider because I'm cheap. But
I'm too lazy to kill it.
Yeah, no kidding. It actually is, like, I actually got it for a couple months, and that, you know, because they had like a free thing, and actually canceling it is impossible. I want you to know that. So don't even try. You're gonna go down a black hole. But so, like, taking, if we were to put in sort of like an umbrella of decision making and sort of like owners willingness to buy in, I would rank them higher. I think that, like, I have more confidence in their decision-making than the guys in, like, Charlotte, or I'm just looking. I, like, quickly, very quickly did a ranking just on a spreadsheet because I love spreadsheets. But, like, I would put them ahead of Charlotte. I would put them ahead of, like, New York. Like, New York has Porzingis, but, like, what have they done to make anybody think that they're going to, like, really have a roadmap to get it to a championship? So if we're factoring all that in, I would put them – somewhere around like 20 to 18. I have them, like, wow. If you just look at the assets on, and like including like players under contract and then draft picks and potential salary cap room, like I thought that was the original metric, and I have them at 24 right now. Cause they're just like those, the ways for them to add talent, basically they'll have somewhere around 16 to 18, maybe even 20 million in cap space in 2 years. That's a good thing. They've got, like, top to bottom, you know, Wade Baldwin, Jarrell Martin, and Deontay Davis. And, you know, like, that is a decent core of young guys. One or two of them is probably going to pan out into starter or rotation, hopefully, type player. I mean, compare that to Russ Smith, Jarnell Stokes, and, you know, whoever the hell else a couple years ago. And, like, that just pales in comparison. So I actually would echo Chase and just say, like, the young guys on this team are legitimate. Like, I never thought Russ Smith was going to be good, like, ever. He was too small. He's just too small. And, like, now I could see paths for any of those three guys being good. Like, I'm really high on Jarrell. And one of the reasons, just to bring it back to Jermichael, like, I wouldn't mind trading Jermichael just because I think Jarrell might be better than him. Jermichael's already like 26 or 27, and he should be good. Like, we should know he's good. Jarrell might be better than him, and Jarrell's like 6 years younger. So if we're factoring in like sort of like stability and just general, the front office has done nothing in 2 to 3 years outside of the Jeff Green trade that makes me think, like, gives me pause to think that they are not good decision makers. If you look at their record, and that would make me just sort of like boost them up into slightly below. I mean, the pick situation is just so bad. They're going to give up their pick this year. And it could, I mean, there's a decent chance. Like, I took the under as well. There's a decent chance it's a lottery pick. They can't stop that from happening. And then that next pick is the one that's just, like, really bad. Because there's no path to, like, blow it up, really. You can't, like, push the reset button and trade guys for future picks if you are just really, like, that's going to be an unprotected pick in, like, 5 years. It's not a good situation.
And that's exactly why they're trying to do this the way that they're doing it. They're trying to stay relevant, stay competitive, especially in this era that we're in now, where as long as LeBron is in Cleveland and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are in Golden State, it kind of feels like we're in another era or we're entering it where it's just going to be waiting until June where those two superpowers clash for the NBA championship every year. So when you're in that kind of setting, and you are in the boat that you're in with regard to picks, you do the best that you can. And I was on the Mike Prada podcast, Limited Upside, for SB Nation NBA, doing their Grizzlies preview. And he's not very high on the Grizzlies. And he and I kind of got into it a little bit. And I essentially said they did the best that they could. You know, they were put in a spot where they had to make moves, where they felt they had to make moves in the case of the Jeff Green trade. And sometimes they worked and sometimes they didn't. I think they're pretty close to batting 1,000. I agree that aside from the Jeff Green move, everything they've done, there at least is logic to it. You may agree or disagree, but there at least is a functional thought process where you can look at numbers, where you can look at the eye test and you can say, hey, this is why they did what they did. I understand. And I can see it working out well for them. And a great example of that is how they've overturned the roster in just the past year or two, to where you go from Jordan Adams being the key cog where you need him to develop in order for something to be a functional scoring bench. And now 2 years later, you have people, maybe not rationally, depending on your feelings about Jordan Adams, talking about cutting Jordan Adams so you can keep, you know, Tony Roten, or cutting Jordan Adams so you can keep an additional wing. Well, Jordan Adams was a guy that a lot of people were very high on, who can clearly score the basketball when healthy. But my point is, that's how drastic the improvement has been just in terms of future assets, just in terms of young guys who could theoretically become something. And that is a major coup for the Grizzlies to still be able to do that, to still keep the key pieces that they have built, their cornerstones of the franchise, and Mike Conley and Marc Gasol the past two off seasons, to find a way to attract, arguably, and I wrote about it, the best that they could have possibly done in free agency. There's no way that they could have gotten anybody, in my opinion, better than Chandler Parsons. Nicola Batum wasn't coming here. Al Horford obviously wasn't going to work. This was the best they could have done, and they nailed it. And even with all of that going well, they still have a lot going against them in terms of future pieces. So I understand and I agree. I think I'd have them right in that same frame as you guys, 20th to 23rd, 24th. I can see an argument for any of that. But I do think...
Yeah, and we should mention on these future rankings that it's a ranking 1 through 30 for the next three seasons. So
right.
if you're going to total up
three
of every team... Yeah, it's only three seasons.
Yes.
So if you're talking
future for the next
three years.
Three
seasons,
get the hell out of my face with 28. Get the hell out of my – for 3 years? For three?
Yeah.
Come on.
There's no way the Grizzlies – if you're going to total wins, there's no way they're anywhere near 28 for the next 3 years because they have no incentive to ever bottom out.
Right.
Look,
that's exactly
all
right.
I have to say – okay. I'm going to walk it back a little bit off of the get the hell out of my face. So – a lot of
you just wanted to do a Vernon quote.
They are
you just wanted to do a Vernon quote. Shout out, baby, let's go.
Exactly. No, it's a lot of it is just a bunch of question marks. We're going to know so much more at the end of the year, or even like a month away from the playoffs, because the following things could happen. The Grizzlies could be like pretty much locked into the playoffs, meaning that the pick they give up is not a big deal, and that probably means that most guys stay healthy. We're going to know so much more about Wade Baldwin and Deontay Davis and frankly, like James Ennis. Like, all that's going to get fleshed out and Jarrell, you could look at it and just be and just in 6 months just know you're already out from under the one pick. You've only got the other pick on the horizon. And if that pick goes from possibly being like a top seven pick to back end of the lottery, like it's given in a year where we just, you know, we fall to like 11 or something, what that means is that the Grizzlies have been healthy, that Mark has added some efficiency and sort of like learned how to age gracefully. I mean, the same thing for Mike. It probably means that Parsons has stayed on the floor, and it means that one of the young guys has like stepped up. And that, I think like at this point, aren't very many things that the Grizzlies outside of like their top, like who is the sixth best player on this team? We have no idea. We have no idea who the sixth best player is, but we're going to know in like 5 months. And that's kind of exciting. It's exciting to think like that guy could be 20 years old. The sixth best player on the Grizzlies could be 20 years old.
It's a lot of big, broad prognostication. And don't get me wrong, I'm one of the kings of prognostication. But like you guys said, it's especially the fact that it's over the next 3 years. To me, that is a lot of doom and gloom forecasting. And where there is a place for that, Chase, you mentioned it really well in your over-under on the Grizzlies. You talked about how, you know, where people are, you know, kind of reaching for, oh, well, they won all these games with 42 or they won 42 games with 28 players and all that stuff. The people that are skeptical or maybe pessimistic, some people would define it as, they're working in fact. They're looking at injuries that are recurring. So there is logic behind the argument. To say that a team is going to bottom out like that, who has no incentive to bottom out because of their draft pick situation, or to say, like a listener of ours who's listening, thank you, Post-Combat Normal, for chiming in the chat room. He said, and I'm guessing that he's typing his response right now. I asked him why he feels this way. He has the Grizzlies winning 82 games over the next 3 years. So I did a quick calculation in my phone, and that would be 27 wins a season on average for the next 3 years. That would not just be a drop-off. That would be a catastrophe. And I'm just not quite sure, unless, you know, a bomb goes off or an asteroid hits the FedEx Forum and the Grizzlies have to completely rebuild their roster, you'd have to see everybody hurt. Everybody would have to get hurt.
Yeah, that would be a pretty low total. Something has gone terribly wrong. This is a little bit of a random question, but kind of related to what we're talking about. Matt, if here's a hypothetical. If the Grizzlies, let's say that the health doesn't go great, but let's say that the Grizzlies underperform to the point where playoffs are dicey, which if you can have one of Conley, Gasol, or Parsons be healthy from a trade perspective, I guess what I've been thinking about some is maybe even if things go badly, we can keep one or two of those three guys healthy enough and playing well enough that we can actually get value out of them. Is that the wrong line of thinking to be having?
You mean like we're kind of like 10th or 9th, and instead of going for the playoffs, we decide to sell off an asset for future assets?
Exactly.
Okay, so Mark is staying in Memphis. I guess it's a different question because instead of like what I could get the most for, the problem is there. I think that's just the wrong question because you just signed Parsons. It was like a big coup. You can't trade him after a year. So that's out. Mark is Mr. Memphis. I mean, like the idea that he was a top 10 player in the NBA like 3 years ago. He started an All-Star game and he's a defense. Like you cannot trade that guy. He just the idea that he actually like lived in Memphis and grew up here, that's just too good to be true. You're never going to get that again. In the history of the franchise, you will never get that again. So, you're left with Conley, and what can you get? I guess I would be left with trading Conley at that point, but, I mean, that's just if you force the hypothetical on me. I just think it's kind of the wrong question to ask. If we were on the edge of the playoffs, I would not be in favor of trading any significant player unless they were just decided. Because, like, the thing about moving Zeebo to the bench that nobody's mentioned yet, they can't do that if his future is in doubt, because he's a free agent after the end of the year. You can't move a guy, expect him to be okay with it, and not take care of him. So I'm anticipating – one thing I floated was doing, like, a one-year deal for him that just, like, overpays him and kind of says thank you. And then the next year, doing what the Spurs and other teams have done, where the guy takes, like, a significant pay cut, because then that doesn't hinder your cap space in 2 years. I kind of think that this move to the bench actually winks at that, because they're going to take care of Zeebo. But if they were in a position where they should start thinking about selling off for the future to gain something, it would be Zeebo and TA that you're looking at and saying, what can we get for these guys? Just because of, like, the special situations of the other three, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the Zeebo thing, when that – I did think about that a little bit, about what that means for his future with him being a free agent. And, I mean, I don't think teams are going to be lining up to offer him a starting role, not any team he would actually want to go to. But that's right. It's definitely interesting. And I will say that there's a video that was, I think, embedded in Mike Wallace's article. And when you read the quotes, if you wanted to read – some discontent in there, you could, but when you watch the video of him, and I recommend that people do that, he is, and we'll see how it goes, because there's no telling. I mean, if we get off to a bad start and he's still on the bench, he might not be too happy about it, but he was joking about it and he was laughing. So I think that you actually get even more of a sense that he's bought into this if you watch that video, maybe, than if you just read the quotes themselves.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I haven't seen that. And I do think, kind of putting a bow on it, I do think that it's a good move for his career. Like, the thing that, you know, that article mentioned was this is a good thing for his minutes. And, I mean, like, that's these are just things that you do when you know this guy is going to be around. He's not – if this is going to cost – if this could potentially cost him, like, $10 million, he's not signing off on this. This comes with, like, a very – nothing in writing, like, we are taking care of you type thing.
Well, and Fizdale said in the interview, the conversation was either with or it was on the Grind City Media, or it might have been in the Tillery conversation. He says that one of the ways he sold it to Zach was, you're not going to get paid like a starter on your next contract. You're going to get paid like a sixth man, like a bench player type of guy. So this is a chance for you to show your worth in that way. This is the chance for you to go out there and kind of really model and mold yourself into this role that you can extend your career with. So I thought that was an interesting quote, to where, yeah, he might take care of in Memphis, but if he, you know, does somehow have a borderline sixth man of the year kind of season, well, then maybe he gets out of Memphis's price range. I mean, obviously they can overpay for him since he's been around so long, and in terms of being able to go over the salary cap, but how much is too much, especially with all the money that's been invested in Conley, Gasol, and Parsons? It all is going to make for a fascinating season. This move today just makes it that much more interesting to watch unfold. And like I said, we'll certainly have both of you back on the show in the future. We have to get to the Chris Vernon audio. It's fantastic. Chase did a great job with it, but with the news of the day, we weren't able to get to it in this show. We will definitely get to it the next time that we have you two on. Matt, Chase, thank you guys for so much for being with me on the show this week.
No problem.
Bye, Joseph.
All right. Thank you, guys. Once again, that was Chase Lucas, Matt Ardlicka. Make sure you're following them on Twitter at Deep Fried Couch and at The Real Ardlicka. They're two of my favorites over at GBB. I'm very lucky. I work with a very talented, very intelligent staff when it comes to basketball, and those are two of the best. Make sure that you are checking out their work over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Again, a unique kind of setting for the podcast this week because of the news of the day with Zach Randolph, because we wanted to get to the Chris Vernon audio that we weren't able to get to. We had this the one long segment. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Lots of good conversation, and there's lots of things to kind of unpack in this season of not necessarily discontent, but a season of change. The winds of change are definitely blowing in Memphis, Tennessee, when it comes to these Grizzlies, new coaching staff, new philosophies, new schemes, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. Chandler Parsons, as we mentioned, limited contact in practice today, according to Tim McMahon of ESPN. So is Chandler Parsons going to be ready? Who's going to start? If it's going to be Tony Allen or if it's going to be Troy Daniels or James Ennis, how is the backup point guard situation going to play out? Is there a trade on the horizon? There is so much up in the air with these Memphis Grizzlies, and it's really going to be one of the more interesting seasons to watch play out and unfold. As people have said for the past few weeks, I can see them finishing in the 2 seed. I can see them finishing in the 7 or 8. It would have to be a cataclysmic injury year like last year for them to fall out. But at the same time, it was possible last year, so you have to kind of think it's possible this year. Next time we're going to be on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. We're really excited next week. We're going to get back to more of our usual kind of schedule. We'll have guests from outside of GBB as well as inside GBB. Really looking forward to getting back into the swing next week. Make sure you're on the lookout for our episode previews and all those things. Make sure you're checking out fanessentials.com. Haven't had an opportunity to hype them because of the structure tonight, getting right into it with the Zeebo news. Fanessentials.net. You want to go to fanessentials.net. You want to make sure you want to sign up for a great service where they send you gear. If you're like me and you're not particularly good at picking out clothes or anything like that, you just want the stuff to rep your team and rep your city, fanessentials.net is the place to go to. We gave away a Fan Essentials box last week. We will do the same thing next week on Wednesday, October 12th. Same time for the live recording, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern time. If you're listening on the East Coast, obviously with the podcast, you can catch it whenever you want over at grizzlybearblues.com. You can also subscribe and listen to the podcast on iTunes. Highly recommend you do that so you never miss an episode of GBB Live. We also have the Chip Williams podcast that continues to record. He's recorded the past couple of episodes with Jonah Jordan. They've done some good work. You know, a little bit different. They do some college football stuff, but they also talk Grizzlies, Tigers, you know, a little bit more broader spectrum here at GBB Live. We focus on the Memphis Grizzlies. So again, next week, we'll be recording on Wednesday, once again, October 12th. We'll have some more preseason basketball to talk about, maybe a larger sample size of Zach Randolph coming off of the bench, and maybe we'll have a better update in terms of Chandler Parsons and where his progress is towards playing on opening night for these Memphis Grizzlies. It's going to be a hell of a season. I just have a feeling about it. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be nuts. These guys are going to have to find their way on the fly, and that includes the coaching staff, who I will be previewing over at grizzlybearblues.com on Friday. Make sure you continue to make grizzlybearblues.com your number one blog, your number one source for Memphis Grizzlies analysis, news, breakdowns, game previews, game summaries, over-under previews, player previews, features, up and down the list. We're expanding our social media. We're going to start expanding our podcast, and we'll come out with a schedule for that here in the next couple of weeks. More guests, more people on the blog hosting their own separate podcast, different voices. I'm trying at grizzlybearblues.com as the site manager to expand and diversify in terms of the types of voice that you hear among our community at grizzlybearblues.com. So thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Chase Lucas and Matt Ardlicka for being tremendous guests. Great insights into the Zach Randolph move to the bench, backup point guard position, the future of the Grizzlies. A lot to unpack on this episode, and I am very appreciative of them joining me. And like I said, and as I always say, I'm appreciative of you joining us wherever you are, however you may be enjoying GBB Live. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, I am your host, Joe Monax. Thank you so much for listening. Grind forth. Until next week, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.